Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I started picking cotton alongside my grandmother when I was maybe 5-6 years old. And I'd have a little bitty cotton sack that she would make for me and make me some knee pads where I could crawl along beside her. And I learned a lot about how hard work farming is. I grew up kind of a halfway farmer, rancher, whatever. In Abbott, Texas, which is about 300 or so population, there was a lot of black farm workers. There was a lot of Mexican farm workers. A lot of guys like me, little white boys trying to go to school, make a living. And we all came together in the farm out there working. Hear the blues coming from over here, and then the Mexican music coming from over here, and then some Bob Wills or something coming over there. It was like living in a big opera.
Today on Fugitive Waves, Hidden Kitchen Stories from Texas with Willie Nelson. When we began searching for Hidden Kitchens a few years ago, we opened up a phone line on NPR and asked listeners nationwide for their hot tips. Some 2,789 minutes of messages flooded in. Over a third of those calls were from Texas. So we called our friend Stuart Vanderbilt from KUT Austin, one of our favorite stations on the planet, and explained the situation. He said, give into it. Go big. Why don't you just open up a hotline for Texas? So we did. And hundreds of people from the Lone Star State called in. And they told us about kitchens that would otherwise have been way off our radar. A kitchen tucked away in a car wash in El Paso. The enchiladas in a bowling alley in Blanco. Cowboy kitchens, space kitchens, Christian kitchens, hip-hop kitchens. About the annual International Pie Party, where, if it's edible and circular at its base, it qualifies. A full 90% of the Texas messages were about meat. People calling in about brisket, barbecue, sausage. But more they were calling out about the people who smoked the meat, stuffed it or grilled it. They called about what they wanted to see preserved and passed on. About the 95-year-old man who barbecued twice a year for his entire neighborhood. About the food bank in Clear Creek. The family restaurant tucked away in a garage in Fort Worth with food that tastes like home, where everyone, the bricklayers, the judges, eat at the same table. Little hidden kitchens are everywhere, especially in Texas. Here we go.
Welcome to Hidden Kitchens, Texas. Stories about the world of secret, unexpected, below-the-radar community cooking across the Lone Star State. Produced by the Kitchen Sisters with KUT in Austin and NPR. I'm your host, Willie Nelson. These stories come from Texas, where I grew up and where I still live. Texas stories of land, family, and place.
Message 7 was received at 2:10 a.m. Saturday.
This is Brian Gooding. It's a gas station in Dallas, Texas called Fuel City. It's located down on the levee just outside of downtown Dallas. They used to have buffalo there, and they have cows that are grazing right there on the levee within sight of downtown. There's a little bitty window in the side of the service station, and they have a taqueria in there. They cook them all night, Texas tacos. Thank you.
I'm Robin Wright Penn, and I was born in Dallas, the home of Fuel City. If Hugh Hefner owned a gas station, it might look a little like this.
I'm John Benda, Fuel City, downtown Dallas. I'm in the business of selling gas and beer, so I thought it would be neat to have an attraction and have a station, too. This one to show, you know, what Dallas looked like 100 years ago. We've got 10 acres. Well, I put in longhorns, went around the country and got the biggest longhorns in the world. You can walk right up to them. The older they are, the bigger the horns. And this one over here looks like he's dead, but he's this nappy. Part of the Texas theme, I put a oil well there, and then I put in a swimming pool over here. And I've got waterfalls shooting up, have girls sitting out by the pool, as you can see. They're pool models. They just lay at the pool and wave at the customers. And from the interstate, you can see people drive by, and they can see the girls at the pool. It's probably more of an attraction than having the animals out in back, the longhorn. 28 cars and trucks can fill up at one time. Truckers come by 24/7, and they can eat, and they can go park their truck and stay for the night.
Palitos con huevo, con chile colorado, de papa con chorizo, de carne.
She's just got this little bitty ice chest. She's selling hot tamales to these people coming by.
Margarita Rocha de Durango.
When I first crossed the border, chingo blings on the mic, better get your recorder.
Pretty busy all day. The gas, the beer. We have people who sell corn, put sour cream, chili, lemon, and mayonnaise. My name is Norma Dominguez. Right, it's around 4 o'clock. There's a lot of business.
Outside, yeah, outside.
Fridays and Saturday nights, I have a DJ outside, and he's jamming and playing music. Kind of a place to be seen.
Dallas from a BC 9 at 9. Well, Dallas is a jewel. Oh yeah, Dallas is a beautiful sight. And Dallas is a jungle, but Dallas gives a wonderful light.
I'm Robin Wright Penn. I was born in Dallas-Fort Worth Airport Hospital. My mother took us everywhere with her. She worked for Mary Kay Cosmetics. My grandfather raised Charlotte cows, so he was way out in Venus, Texas. And everybody would come back to the farm, the big summer reunion. You would do hot water cornbread, hush puppies, fried okra. You'd do chicken fried steak with that. My grandmother was the cook. Your whole day was prepping for lunch and then dinner. And most of that meal was starch. And then all the aunts and uncles would come to have lunch on a Saturday. And I remember my grandmother saying, okay, let's just go down the list. Do we have everything? All right, we've got the goulash, we've got the hush puppies, we've got the red beans and rice.
You have 87 new messages.
It's a Wonder Bread just sitting on a plate.
Hundreds of people from every part of Texas called in about the hidden kitchen traditions in their lives. Stories of how we tend and feed our communities.
Message received at 7:50 a.m.
My name is Martha Cook Ward, and we're in Austin, Texas. Green Pastures was my family home and restaurant that my parents started in the late 40s, right around the time I was born, the eighth of eight children. My mother had a reputation for giving fabulous parties and for having a lot of children. So the combination led to the necessity for ponying up. And people said, well, Mary, you love to give parties. Why don't you do it as a business? So that's how it started.
My parents had supper clubs. My mother, she was very good friends with Lady Bird. Lyndon started out in local politics and was here in Austin. So they would come to these supper club events with other people of that social class, because that's just what people did back then. Kind of the gentry of Austin. The wait staff at that time was what we referred to as behind the chair service. So it was a very this old traditional South service, and almost all of our wait staff were professors at the Black University on the east side of town, Houston Tillotson. My grandfather, Henry Falk, was a lawyer. People would come to him and say, well, you know, Judge Falk, I want a divorce or I want some kind of civil suit. And he'd say, well, you know, you just need to come out to the house for a few days and we'll talk about it. He says, I've got some really mighty fine buttermilk out there and some good cornbread, and we'll just talk. And that's how he handled his legal practice. There's a psalm, Let Me Lie Down in Green Pastures, and I mean, that's the ultimate resting place.
The Ice Houses of Texas.
Hey, Grandpa. Are you there? How you doing? Oh, pretty good. Hey, I got a question for you. Remember that ice house you used to go to and Pop used to go to? I think it's still there, isn't it? Oh, yeah, down West Avenue. Oh, I'm doing fine. Yeah, I'm at work. Hey, I got to run, Grandpa. I got cars coming in. All right, we'll see you later. Love you. Hey, there's an ice house over on West Avenue. And he said, everybody there is 150 years old. I'm off tomorrow. If y'all want me to take you over there, I can. I'm Michael Ulrich, the doorman at La Mansión del Rio Hotel in San Antonio, Texas.
An ice house is easy to spot. You look for horseshoe pits outside. You look for domino tables that are worn slick. You can spot an ice house by the sawdust. Even though they don't store blocks of ice and sawdust anymore, you can still see the sawdust evident on the tables, on the dance floor. Are the boards warped from having 1,000 beers spilled on them over the last 100 years? They're just clues. They're smells. What's the parking lot made out of? Crushed shell in southeast Texas? Crushed limestone in the hill country? If there are not 47 billion bottle caps that have been run over by 47.5 billion pickup trucks, then you're in the wrong place.
That's the ice house right there. That's it. The Texan. Garage doors are open. No AC. You're just sweating in your beard. It's so hot.
It's a train beer. Every time the train passes, you get a beer for $1.25.
The ice house started off being where cut ice was stored. We didn't have refrigeration. My name is Rhett Rushing, Institute of Texan Cultures here in San Antonio. Beforehand, getting ice was almost unheard of. All ice was harvested from northern lakes, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, wherever you had thick ice. And it was a major industry. You'd go out and you'd saw up the ice into cubes or rectangular blocks, packed in sawdust. And they would load it on a ship and haul it as far south as they could. Sometimes they even made it to Galveston before it was gone.
The old ice houses, they were the first one to serve beer ice down. My name is John Schiavelli, Yellow Checker Cab in San Antonio, Texas. Sancho's is a hidden place. It's underneath the bridge, underneath the freeway. If you drive by, you will not see it. You have to know where it's at. Gets packed at night. The whole lot is filled with cars.
I mean, Sanchez is a place to be. I mean, it's an old hole-in-the-wall place and everything, but you have your lawyers, judges. Oh, man. I mean, famous people come here, you know.
In the 1860s, there were 3 ice manufacturing plants in San Antonio. There were only 5 others in the entire U.S. My name is Randy Mallory. I'm a journalist in East Texas. German immigration came into Texas in the 1840s, needed beer. Germans and Czechs, a lot of the little communities would have their own little breweries, and therefore you have to have that ice.
Growing up, my parents used to go to an ice house when we were very, very little. They would bring the family. They'd buy the little kids the soda and potato chips and everything to keep them in their tank while they were out there dancing and having a nice time and enjoying the music.
My My name is Ronnie Gomez, and they call me Ronnie G. Here's the back patio.
We used to play horseshoes right here.
When the old timers were still alive.
See, that's the old domino table. Look, see, look.
It's old. It's old as dirt.
Traigo una pena clavada como puñalada.
The conjunto style of music came from the ice houses that were up and down St. Mary Street, south of the quarries, where the Germans and the Mexican stonemasons got together in the evenings. You've got accordions, German rhythms, and their Spanish lyrics. I'm Ron Zimmerman, filmmaker and resident of San Antonio.
Well, it doesn't get any better than this. And you feel it under the trees? Nice little breeze. 100-degree day. Having some beers with your comrades here.
We're tile setters. We grew up together, yeah. Work together, cry together.
San Antonio's ice houses. They're like London's pubs or Paris street cafes or Vienna's coffee houses or Munich's beer halls. They're people's public living rooms.
7 days a week, we open up at 7.
And 7 days a week, we're open till 11.
From 7.
Till 11.
From 7.
Till 11.
Well, that's why we sing.
7-Eleven's got everything.
In the early 1900s, people didn't have electrical refrigeration in their homes. They had ice boxes, put blocks of ice in it. And the ice plants built ice stations scattered all over neighborhoods and became neighborhood hangouts. In the 20s, in Dallas, Southland Ice Company, ice stations. And the one in Oak Cliff decided, why not sell a few other items, eggs, milk, right from the ice dock? And people liked that convenience, the longer hours. Southland Ice decided to expand it. Initially, they were called totems. Someone had brought a totem pole from Alaska and put it out in front of one of these stores. At one point, they came up with the idea of 7-Eleven. 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and that's the name that stuck.
The birth of the 7-Eleven.
We're in our 79th year. I'm Cynthia Baker, Communications Manager for 7-Eleven Incorporated, Dallas, Texas. And this company has just a history of innovation. All of the things that have come out of 7-Eleven, the Slurpee, the Big Gulp, Coffee to Go, 7-Eleven has become the largest convenience store operation in the world, over 30,000 stores globally. We want employees to understand that we began as a small ice house right in Dallas. We still offer ice because that's convenient. So you have so many parties and picnics and barbecues, and you gotta have that ice. Don't forget the bag of ice.
The birth of the Slurpee.
Slurpee was developed in 1966 in Dallas. It's a semi-frozen beverage. We kind of got the idea from this person who was making these little drinks, figured out how to mass produce it, and it has really taken off. Our Slurpee just has a life of its own. It really does.
The birth of the frozen margarita.
It's been much greater than anything I could have ever dreamed about. I had no idea it'd end up in the Smithsonian. It's got a big sign on it, world's first frozen margarita machine. The day they took it out, I purposely was not at the restaurant. Couldn't bear to see it go out the building. Mariano Martinez. We're in Dallas, Texas. Fourth generation in my family to be in the restaurant business in the late 50s. People would walk into my father's restaurant with a bottle of tequila someone had given them from Mexico. They'd go, what do I do with it? They didn't know how you drank tequila. And my father would make margaritas in a blender. The next thing you know, the bottle would be empty, everybody would be having a great time. I knew there was something magic in the drinks. In 1971, I opened my first restaurant, Mariano's Mexican Restaurant and Cantina. I knew there was magic in my father's margarita, and so I went to him and asked him for a secret recipe, which he never shared with anyone. And I thought, okay, now I've got the winning combination. This restaurant's going to be a big success. First week I was in business, customers would stop me to complain about the margaritas. They weren't good, they were inconsistent, and they weren't cold. And we were trying to make them the way my dad used to make them for one party of four at a time. They just couldn't keep up. I spent a sleepless night. I saw my dreams evaporating. The next morning, I stopped at a 7-Eleven store, and I saw a Slurpee machine sitting there. The light bulb went off in my head. I picked up the telephone. I called the Southland Corporation, the owner of the 7-Eleven stores. Tequila. They were very guarded, wouldn't share with me where to buy a Slurpee machine. So I ended up buying a soft serve ice cream maker. We souped it up like you would a car. That was unique. We come to Mariano's, we get a babysitter. We go into the cantina, we eat nachos, have margaritas. And the music and the margaritas would take hold of them, and they were dancing in between the tables. And next thing you know, all these Anglos are over there dancing like Mexicans. I mean, it was almost like I threw a party that lasted for 20 years. Tequila!
The birth of the Frito.
He was consumed by Fritos. He worked incessantly at home, on vacation, on weekends. He loved it. He experimented in the kitchen at home. We were his guinea pigs. I'm Kalita Doolin. I grew up here in Dallas, and I'm the daughter of Charles Elmer Doolin, the founder of the Frito Company. He had a bakery in San Antonio, a confectionery. He wanted to have chips on the counter. Tortillas staled too easily. So he found a chip in a gas station, an extruded chip, and he bought the recipe, the patent, and 14 customers from a man who was from Mexico who lived in San Antonio. It was 1932. He began the manufacturing with his mother and brother in the kitchen, and they were making them by hand using a potato ricer with a slot instead of the little round holes, bagging them and selling them by day to gas stations. It's a masa fried in a corn oil, salted, and he hybridized the corn. Part of the secret ingredients of Frito is that it's his own corn.
He had lots of hidden kitchens. He had the kitchen off to the side of his office. He had the kitchen at home. He had factories. His life was one big kitchen.
I'm Alan Governor, and I'm Kalita's husband. And on the counter, he had a line of Bunsen burners with little tripods with metal trays on top of them. He'd call the employees into his office, lead them into the kitchen, and have them taste the different flavoring for the chips.
Dad named it Fritos. It means fried thing. That's what they are in Mexico, is they're Fritos, beach food. And he also invented the Cheetos. Well, I never brought Fritos to school. We didn't have them at home that much, and when we did, Dad brought them off the conveyor belt with no salt on them. Dad was into health food. We always went to the Natural Food Association meetings, and he was a follower of Dr. Shelton in San Antonio, who had a clinic for fasting. Dad was vegetarian. He had a bad heart and bad lungs and weight problems, and he was looking for alternative cures. We were raised vegetarian, and people made fun of me for eating yogurt and figs in my sack lunch. Mom would use Fritos in cooking, making up recipes. Fritoki pie was one of her inventions. Recipes were printed on the back of the bag. One of the most strange ones is called Jets. Melted dark chocolate with Fritos dropped onto a cookie sheet to solidify. And then you just crunch them up, fat on top of fat.
Hidden Kitchens, Texas.
You have 56 new messages.
Hi, Kitchen Sisters. This is Tiffany Travis calling with NASA Johnson Space Center, Houston, Texas.
Every week he cooks up a big batch of rutabaga.
Her mom sold tamales out of a window in the garage in Fort Worth, Mico Sanita.
Giant St. Joseph's Day altar and a huge meal with
pancake breakfast, political barbecues, fish fries, church suppers.
And it pulls the entire neighborhood together.
It's the food, but more than that, it's the fellowship.
LaGrange, Knights of Columbus, cooks over 6,000 chicken dinners.
Community cooking across the great state of Texas.
Downtown Seguin,
Bernie, Texas.
Sunset Valley Farmers Market.
I'm Robin Wright Penn.
And I'm Willie Nelson for Hidden Kitchens, Texas.
And let me tell you what, everything is served right there off the plow disc on the back of the truck.
Hidden Kitchens, Texas was produced by the Kitchen Sisters, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson. Mixed by Jim McKee in collaboration with KUT Austin and NPR.
Thought I would tell you about my grandma and her green jello salad.
Our associate producer is Laura Folger. Special thanks to Nathan Dalton, Kate Volkman, and Maria Walker. Hawk Mendenhall, Stuart Vanderbilt, and the KUT team in Austin, KSTX in San Antonio, KERA in Dallas, and to all the callers to the Hidden Kitchens Texas Hotline.
Okay, this is Phyllis Allen again. We have two funeral food ladies left in our community.
Our score was composed and performed by the Austin Steel player Cindy Cash Dollar, who grew up on a raw milk dairy farm in Woodstock.
H&H Car Wash and Coffee Shop in El Paso.
There are a lot more stories in the book Hidden Kitchens. Stories, recipes, and more from NPR's Kitchen Sisters.
Auntie Jewel with three-layer coconut cake.
Support for Hidden Kitchens comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, KUT Austin, and Humanities Texas.
Wild Mustang Grape.
For KUT and NPR, I'm Willie Nelson. When in doubt, cook.
Fugitive Waves is produced by the Kitchen Sisters with Nathan Dalton and Brandy Howe. You can follow us on Twitter at Kitchen Sisters or share your photos on Instagram.
You can help support the creation of these stories by subscribing to our podcast. It's easy and free. Sign up at kitchensisters.org.
Fugitive Waves is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a collective of the best story-driven, creative, cutting-edge radio shows on Earth. Radiotopia from PRX is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. If you'd like to become a sponsor of Fugitive Waves, and frankly, who wouldn't, or other shows like it, email sponsor@prx.org. You're listening to Fugitive Waves, stories from the flip side of history.
Radiotopia.